high slot and shoots. He scores. Quinn Hughes in overtime, and he's the leading rookie scorer in the NHL.
Your Vancouver Canucks live here.
Here's Horvat with a partial break down the left wing. Bo Horvat, 18. He scores. The captain does it again.
This is Canucks Central with Bick and the Boss on Sportsnet 650.
What is up? Welcome to Canucks Central with Bick and the Boss. Bick Nizar, Craig McEwen here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Canucks Central brought to you by Avenue Machinery. Give yourself the Avenue advantage and stay under the cap by saving thousands on select Kubota skid steers and excavators. Visit avenuemachinery.ca. C-Mac, we have a 30-second NHL team. Finally, they get a roster. It's not official, but we know 96% of their roster, thanks to the insiders tweeting out today. We know all but one team now, so 96% of the teams are filled up. And now we just wait for this evening. I think this evening will still be fun with the sale gate and the whole... production by the water and everything like that. It'll still be worth checking out. And also, hey, maybe there's going to be some side deals that get announced tonight as well.
Yeah, that would be great. Because boy, oh boy, doesn't it seem like this big extravaganza the NHL had planned and, they're throwing fish at Pike Street and Market and the subterfuge, like the wrong name. Ooh, we're going to put that on social media. And then all of a sudden... Yeah, hats off to all the insiders today for just going to town and bringing all this to life. And man, oh man, Bick, I've been, my twin tower, Alexiak is gone, Larson is gone. What is happening here? Those were all the problems or the solutions I had for the Canucks if I was the GM, and now they're kapoof, they're gone.
Shockwaves early in the morning with Adam Larson landing in Seattle. I'm floored. I was absolutely floored. Not only just that he went there, but I'm a little surprised at the dollar figure as well of how cheap it is. It was 4x4, and look, I get it, tax-free and all that sort of stuff, but I look at that and I think this D market suddenly might be a bit depressed of what we might see come... July 28th. And I guess in theory, that could be good news for the Canucks if you wanted to, say, aim higher now and go after a David Savard or a, dare I say, Dougie Hamilton. But I was stunned at 4x4.
Yeah, he had to want out. Did he not? Because you don't think the Oilers would have given him that? And there was rumors that, that was the ballpark that they were looking at.
But just think of the numbers we were talking about yesterday. We were saying, hey, you got to earmark... $5 million a season, which I thought was still reasonable. And I look at Adam Larson and I think, depending on the state, taxes and all this sort of stuff, or province, $23 to $28 million player. We've talked about this before, looking at the total money and then figuring out the years after that. He's taken 16. It's a far cry from where I thought Adam Larson would get valued.
Yeah, for sure. And, the Canucks have defensive problems. Edmonton now. Boy, oh boy, oh boy. Losing Larson, this was the type of guy I think most Canuck fans were hoping you could get. That guy who could be that defensive stalwart, possibly pair with Hughes, maybe someone else. But yeah, that number in total really surprises me a lot, Bick. I thought it would be much higher. But again, we've talked about this in this flat cap and teams, maybe... Not that there's collusion, but maybe they're all gone to all these players and said, listen, guys, the good old days pre-pandemic are going to be a while before we return and see that again.
Well, okay. So what strikes me as far as the Canucks angle of all this, and we'll talk about the rest of the Kraken team as the show goes along. Dixon Ward's going to join us, talk about building a team from scratch. And also Michael Dick will join us as well. He got named to the... Team Canada World Junior team once again, so he'll join us at 2:30.
But as far as the Canuck side of this, Cole Lind expected to be the selection later tonight. So we'll keep an eye on that. But as far as Adam Larson now, like, this is an option stripped away from Vancouver that, hey, come July 28th, we're expected to be competitive offers from Vancouver to bring in the 6'3" Swedish shutdown D-man who just felt like, you know, hand in glove, perfect guy next to Quinn Hughes. And there is a pairing solved for X amount of years, however long you signed Adam Larson for, 4 or 5 years. And now that gets taken away. And, you know, the right side of D market was already, at least on the free agency, was already rather thin. It's why a guy like Travis Hamonic, you know, might be looking elsewhere because it's a good opportunity to get paid. And now you take Adam Larson out of it, going to the expansion Seattle Kraken, and it looks really bleak really fast, especially for the type of D-man that the Vancouver Canucks sorely need. We've talked about, hey, Nate Schmidt, yeah, he's on the roster. It's just with Schmidt, Rathbone, Myers, Hughes, you got a lot of redundancies in that defense. You got to start getting different styles of players, and they got to move a guy out to bring someone in, and suddenly, like, you know, Dougie Hamilton's there available, but is he quote unquote that shutdown D-man, or is he a more expensive version of Nate Schmidt?
I don't see a world where the Canucks go after that. I mean, does this bring Hamonic back into play for Vancouver? In the sense that they know what he can bring. I'm sure Edmonton would look at Hamonic now, but I wonder now, perhaps, you know, Travis thought maybe he'd get a little bit more on the open market. And listen, he's not going to play for what he played with last year, but does this then bring the Canucks back into the conversation with a Hamonic and say, hey, look at what this guy's getting? Now, again, tax-free, all that. There's some real advantages to signing that type of deal down there. But bottom line, you're right. The options or some of the, I guess, the hope of Canuck fans of getting someone, you know, you see the Jets retain DeMello, apparently. Like, it's going to be challenging to find that shutdown or right shot now defenseman. And maybe, dare I say, and let's hope they don't, but would they have to overpay to go get someone now?
Yeah. And we'll do this in two parts here, because I kind of want to highlight the right-sided D-men that are available in free agency and then kind of go through the guys that are available via trade. And we've heard the Canucks say potentially being active in the trade market Thursday, tomorrow at 10 o'clock. The roster freeze gets lifted, and we'll see what kind of activity that springs about across the NHL. But, you know, we started with the high end there. It's Dougie Hamilton. Don't think the Canucks are going to splurge on that type of deal. But then you start going through it. It's like, okay, Tyson Barrie is more of the same for Nate Schmidt. Jason Demers has already previously said no to Vancouver in the past. Is that something you want to, you know, revisit? And then you start stripping away these names. You're right. It is Travis Hamonic again. It is David Savard. Luke Shen. Like, is that something you go down to revisit? Not that he could pay top pair minutes, but you might just need to bring some bodies in here, because right now it's Tyler Myers standing all alone on the right side unless you bring back Nate Schmidt. And a lot of these names are kind of underwhelming. The one that kind of sticks out to me is Brandon Montour, that, you know, we've mentioned his name in the past, someone who can kind of play that role of a defensive D-man. Now, I think a lot of people would have preferred an Adam Larson type if you were bringing someone in via free agency. But now that we know that, hey, 4x4 might be in and around that market, do you warm up to the idea of a Brandon Montour if it's 3x4 instead of, you know, 3.5, 3.75 for term?
Yeah, perhaps. You know, it will be tricky for the Canucks to do all the math, and we've talked about it. Hey, Bick, if they don't lose some money here, they're not going to be signing much anyways. It might be those 1 year and show me deals, or trying to find a bargain basement opportunity. But Luke Shen was a guy that I felt, especially, and you remember Quinn Hughes' debut and how he kind of, I'll say, sheltered Hughes opening game for him, and I watched him in the playoffs, and yeah, not a regular in Tampa, but he's a guy who has some size, some heft, if we want to say. Perhaps that is something, Vic, that they have to look at, kind of those type of options, because I still don't see them getting into the big sweepstakes for someone, you know, outside of the Larson. That one intrigued me. I just don't see them diving in with some of these more expensive options. They're going to have to find value somewhere. And you know, perhaps because Shen has some familiarity here, again, a few years older, not the most mobile guy, but can play tough. And like I said, partnered quite well with Hughes in Hughes' debut. Maybe that is something you have to explore.
I mean, you could convince me as a partner with Jack Rathbone, right? Like, the, you know, lowered minutes, sheltered minutes, and that's, here's a veteran guy. Just do the same thing you did with Quinn Hughes for five games, but we might extrapolate that over a course of a season, and there's going to be some rotation there. Maybe Alex Edler comes back, and that's something you can explore. But as far as finding solutions to play alongside Quinn Hughes, Adam Larson today signing with the Seattle Kraken is kind of a blow for the Canucks' plans. I see a lot of people texting in, hey, what if it's a side deal and he can still come over to Vancouver? I can't imagine Adam Larson's doing that. And I'm also pretty sure if you sign a contract, it precludes you from getting traded till a certain date in the NHL season. I'm not sure what that date is this year with the calendar kind of changing, but generally speaking, if you sign a contract, you're good for a little bit to be protected.
Yeah, we'd have to, I guess, dive into that a little bit more, but Seattle's also signing these players. You know, possibly some of the moves will be to flip them. You know, rumors of Giordano possibly maybe going off to New York or some of that, but you know, Ron Francis is also trying to build a team, and he's got two pretty good defensive defensemen there now with Oleksiak and Larson, and why would he want to give something like that up? And I guess we'll never know for at least the next 24, 48 hours if there's something in the hopper for some other stuff. But yeah, I don't know, Bick. I guess the dare to dream, my Winnipeg guys, DeMello, my dare to dream was, you know, that maybe the Canucks would go out and get a Larson. Maybe we have to temper our expectations and find those Shen-type players, and perhaps that pushes you to look forward up top and get a better winger in here. But I still am a big believer they have to sort out at the back end as well.
There's a couple of things from last night with Elliot Friedman when he joined the People's Show. Because if we're talking about dipping your toes into the free agent market, I know fans in this market get a little concerned, be like, hey, they've overspent at times on July 1st. I don't know if I want to see that all over again. Elliot did kind of allude to that the Canucks don't really want to go down the path of giving up term. Here's what he had to say about on the Canucks and long-term contracts.
I think they've also checked in on kind of the edgy wingers. You know, I mentioned Jaden Schwartz a few days ago. I think they've been in on Hyman. I mean, that's reported. I think one of the issues here, however, is that I don't think the Canucks are crazy about term at this point in time. And to get some of these play, I mean, I'm talking about maximum term or near maximum term. I think they're willing to do some term, but I'm not sure they're willing to do maximum term. Close to maximum term. And you just looked at Barclay Goodrow, he got 6 years. And that tells you what the market kind of is for these guys, like the Colemans, the Hymans, the Sauds, these kind of Schwartzes, these kinds of players. I think the Canucks do like Schwartz quite a bit, actually. But I just think it's, I don't know how crazy they're going to be to go for 7 or 8 years or even 6 years on some of these players. And I think it's going to make it harder for them to land them. But I think they've got a lot of balls in the air or lines in the water, whichever tortured analogy you guys might use. But, you know, I think they're trying to be judicious in some of these cases. And, you know, as we saw with the Goodrow deal, this is a very difficult time to be judicious.
So that's Elliot Friedman last night on the People Show talking about Canucks, you know, trying to stay away from long-term deals. And yeah, if you're going down the, you know, to extend that to the D-men, the Savard's path, you're probably going to have to give up some level of term. You know, that's why I still kind of circle a name like Brandon Montour in the free agent market. You know, solving the issue in the trade market, a bit different. Because, you know, some guys that, you know, they've been linked to in the past, like, say, Rasmus Ristolainen, like, he's a year away from free agency. I'm not sure if you can, you know, give up prime capital to solve an issue for one season for a guy that might jet out after that. So that's something to keep an eye on moving forward for the Vancouver Canucks. What happens with the right-handed D market? You can keep your thoughts coming in, 650, 650. As for who got selected by the Vancouver Canucks, report that it will be Cole Lynn made official later tonight. The surprising bit, C-Mac, put out by Ian McIntyre, it wasn't Braden Holtby. And Ian putting out a tweet, Kraken and the Canucks talked about Braden Holtby, but believe Vancouver not interested in retaining salary or adding a sweetener, so Cole Lynn became the logical pick for the Kraken. That's rather interesting that Jim Benning and the Canucks management group holding firm on keeping Braden Holtby for now, because if you weren't willing to retain salary, if you weren't willing to add in a prospect, I would imagine that means they're aware of something else on the horizon after tonight.
Yeah, you would have to think there was only a couple ways they were going to move this player and contract, and one was Seattle. If you're cutting that option off because you didn't want to, that would lead me to believe that they at least have an understanding or an option or feel that they're close to something whereby they maybe don't have to retain as much. Maybe they don't have to retain anything at all. But to me, that suggests that, you know, Jim Benning and company feel like Holtby is still something or someone that they could do something with here. And, you know, thanks Kraken, but we're not going to need you in this situation. Because if there wasn't any other options picked, I don't know how you wouldn't go down that road with Seattle.
Yeah, because we talked about yesterday, just, you know, if you want to accomplish some of the things you want this offseason, as far as, you know, shifting the money around and trying to be aggressive this offseason in the free agent market, money has to come off, and most notably Braden Holtby and Nate Schmidt, and you know, here was an opportunity to do so, one of the opportunities to do so, obviously, if you think you have something else in the hopper. I guess in theory, you could come out of this and say, relatively encouraged to say, get out scot-free with only Cole Lind being what gets plucked away from your roster, and you didn't have to incentivize Seattle because, hey, there might be value outside of the expansion draft to alleviate yourself of that $4.3 million cap hit, and perhaps more importantly, the $5.7 million cash that's going to be get delivered to Braden Holtby this year. I'm curious of what parameters we might see moving forward then. If it's a scenario where Seattle would only do it if 50% was retained, and maybe there's an offer elsewhere that, hey, we'll do it for 25% retention or 10% retention, so long as it's something, and that's ultimately just a better offer for Vancouver. Or if there's a scenario where, you know, trade out a contract to get another contract back.
And yeah, that could be an option.
You know, we talk about moving the money around with Nate Schmidt. You could, in theory, do the same thing with Braden Holtby. Is there a $3 million player or a $2.7 million player that you can plug in on your roster elsewhere, and here's a team that needs a goalie, whether it be, you know, injury-related or just lack of manpower, they could take on a contract, and that's how you make that type of trade. More traditional of a hockey trade than just dumping salary out.
Yeah, and there could be retention in something else that they're working on too, Bic. And, you know, you don't want to take on or keep too much. So you're right. There could be a hockey trade in the case of Holtby. But my suspicion, as you pointed out, is that the Canucks do feel at least somewhat confident. I won't say they're going to guarantee it, but they feel somewhat confident that they don't need Seattle in this situation, or what Seattle was going to do for them, they can do better elsewhere.
Let's play this back from this morning, actually, on Halford and Brough. Kevin Woodley joining the show, the goalie whisperer. And he did mention just Holtby trade targets as well, and how much interest that he thought he had heard around the league.
I'm not buying the level of interest around the league. And I say that only because one of the teams reported as interested in him. I can't say this for all of them, but I know one of them. I checked in on a few, and one of them definitively told me in the goaltending department, not a whisper, not a conversation, was never brought up. And not all the teams bring in their goalie departments for these decisions, but this is one that does. And this is a team that I heard other reports saying, was definitely interested in Braden Holtby, and it wasn't even close to being reality. So I have some questions about the level of interest in Braden Holtby that's being sort of thrown out there in this market, but I don't doubt for a second that there are some that are interested in him, especially, as I said, if Seattle steps in as an intermediary and reduces the cost.
That's Kevin Woodley when he joined Halford and Brough earlier today. You can go listen to the full interview and the podcast as well on sportsnet.ca/650 or on your local podcatchers. Let's get to your submissions coming in, 650-650 to Don't At Me. It is for lease busters. Need or want out of your car lease? Avoid early termination and negative equity costs by going to leasebusters.com. Guaranteed lease relief. Don't At Me, C-Mac. The Kraken weren't going to build a championship roster on day one. I know some people feel like they had a missed opportunity based on these early leaks of the 29 picks so far. Just wait till you see the whole picture, I think. We'll see some side deals later tonight. Ian Furness reporting out of Seattle that there might be a lot of side deals still to come. But, this is going to take some time. Vegas is not the standard to apply here. Vegas were the exception to the rule for the amount of success they had. And not to mention, how did we feel about Vegas after the draft? We thought, terrible team. It remains to be seen. There's a certain level of talent on this team. Could they have spent a bit more? Yes, but they clearly had a plan coming into this, and that's financial flexibility and corner the market on a certain target. And that was the defense.
Yeah, and listen, it's like evaluating a trade right away. You think, this team won this move, and then over time it proves that, wait a minute, we should reevaluate that, and maybe the other side got the better of it. We're not going to be able to judge exactly what they've done here, Bick, until they hit the ice. But there is some pressure in Seattle to be better than just a bad expansion franchise. And I think they will be with the pieces that they've picked up and some of the moves that they've made. And they won't be done in what they're trying to accomplish. And those side deals, to me, are just going to be oh so key. What do they hold? What's the price that's going back the other way? And then how does Seattle manipulate and use that to their advantage?
650-650, jumping into the text message inbox. Again, I love starting the show when we already have something coming in before we even get going. Don't At Me. Half of Vancouver probably feels they could have put together a better Kraken team than Ron Francis. Hashtag underwhelming. I got to disagree. I think there's a lot of potential for what this team can do outside of just the 29 players so far reported to have been selected. The full picture has not been painted for what Seattle is just yet. this one, unsigned. There's a secret handshake between the Twins and Erickson that he goes home and he gets some property in Sweden from the Twins. People looking for new ways to open up the cap space, C-Mac.
Yeah, somehow I doubt that. In the Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. Don't At Me. Seattle will win its first regular season game against the Canucks with Cole Lind scoring the winning goal against Braden Holtby.
So we're predicting goal scores and also no side deal.
Yeah, Holtby's staying and Lind is lighting up the league.
Don't At Me. The NHL dropped the ball and not taking steps to protect Seattle's selections getting out. Kyle from the island. We'll talk about this in a bit, too, but I'm not convinced I even really care that much.
I care. Like, here's the thing. I guess, you ever been to a movie or going to a movie, I should say, and then someone spoils the ending for it, and you go watch it anyway, and you're like, that's really good, but I wish I didn't know the end. It would have been that much better. In this case, I guess logistically, players and agents have to know, and then those things sort of leak out. So I understand what you mean, just the theater, and I can't wait to see Gary Payton and Marshawn Lynch and, Flying Salmon. But at the same token, I do feel that the big reveal of we don't know what's behind door number two or three or who's actually going for the Canucks, that to me might have or should have or would have or could have created a lot more suspense than how it happened today. Although this morning was just like, grab your coffee and just watch all this stuff roll in, and each insider just picking away at what was happening was fascinating.
It is a bit of a logistical nightmare, though, to try to pull that off. Because as much as we're talking about, hey, this is a TV event, it's for the NHL, it's also for the fans of Seattle. This is their team. They're going to want to showcase some of these players live at their event to try to drum up some of the interest there. And I think you need to be able to tell some of the players, say, hey, you're our guy, get down to Seattle. Now, Larson and Oleksiak, obviously they've been negotiating with them, and hopefully they come to deals, and hey, we can unveil you at this big event. Like, that's part of this as well. It's not just about the rest of the NHL fans that are, you know, thirsty for the information.
I guess in Seattle, they're not going to care. They're going to want to hear from these players for the first time as members of the Kraken. They're going to want to see the excitement of all those Seattle sports celebs taking part in all this. And it builds the excitement in market, but from an out of market experience and just watching from afar and wanting to see all this sort of stuff, it doesn't pull me as much as it would be, I guess, if I was a fan of the Kraken, could finally hear, you know, here's our new captain, Mark Giordano, talking about what it's like to be coming to Seattle. That appeals to me as the local or regional fan, as opposed to the national one, where the big unveil, I think, would be better on a national front.
Don't at me. This one's from Greasy Troll. The Kraken will win multiple playoff series before the Canucks win a playoff game. Wow. That one's from Greasy Troll into our 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. We'll read a couple more after the break, but we got to run here. It is Bick Desar, Craig McHugh in here on Canucks Central in the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
This is your destination for all things Canucks. This is Canucks Central with Bick and the Boss on Sportsnet 650.
Welcome back to Bick and the Boss on Canucks Central. Bick Nazar and Craig McEwen here on Sportsnet 650. Canucks Central brought to you by Avenue Machinery. Give yourself the Avenue advantage and stay under the cap by saving thousands on select Kubota skid steers and excavators. Visit avenuemachinery.ca. Text inbox jumping today, C-Mac.
Yeah, don't at me overtime today, Bick. Yeah, overtime. We're going to OT here.
Yeah, you know, usually if there's one or two, we might bypass it, but felt bad. Couldn't get into all these don't at me. So let's fire off a couple here. What do you got?
So this one comes in. Don't at me. Frank Cervelli, you did a great job and everything today, breaking all those stories, but I still didn't want to know until 5. What's next? Does the Titanic end up sinking? Spoiler alert, Cervelli.
Okay, if you're looking for something exciting, I guess, tonight and over the course of the overnight into tomorrow morning.
Is there like something on the Family Channel? What are you going to tell me here?
No, the side deals.
Okay, yes, the like, side deals, yes.
The roster is a bit confusing. Like, there were a couple of picks where I kind of raised my eyebrow, and I was like, who is this guy from Philly? I've got no idea. And maybe there's something else, you know, cooking or cracking that might, you know, be of intrigue. Now, I'm trying to remember back to 2017, the Vegas expansion draft. I feel like some of them started to kind of trickle in that night and then into the next morning. But, like, that's the next level of intrigue now is what happens as far as trades.
Yeah, for sure it does. And that's, again, the secrets or the things that haven't been revealed. We now know pretty much all the players, I guess. You said 96% of them. But, yeah, we don't know what the packages or the side deals. And as been reported by numerous people out of Seattle, there's supposedly lots on the table. So that is going to be fascinating reveal. And the agents and players, they might know some stuff. This is where I believe those insiders are really going to go to work and go to town and try and figure some of this stuff out.
Go figure, by the way, that Steve Yzerman would be the one who manages to hold his cards closest to the chest for the longest. Because that's the one team we're waiting on. years.
Yeah, Stevie Y, maybe a little bit of Lou Lamoriello-esque in him. Just, you know, hold those cards tight to your vest.
He's already got that reputation, and then something like this happens. He's just thinking, like, man, he just keeps doing it. Or maybe the options for Seattle are so dire from a last place team. They're like, you know, we'll figure it out as we go along. Although yeah, I'd expect it to be Troy Stetcher.
That would be my guess, having, you know, him played with Hakstol at university. Mm-hmm. You would think it would be Troy from Richmond, kind of a local Pacific Northwest guy, let's call it. But yeah, that would be my suspicion.
Don't at me, 650, 650. This one is Snoop the Dog. A side deal on the way with Price to Seattle and Habs retaining salary. I'm not so sure. The no movement clause was waived for expansion purposes only, not for trade purposes. So,
It be great, Bic, if all of a sudden it was like, psych, all you guys were wrong, and we picked all these other players, and it is an actual reveal tonight, and you know the fish catching Kevin Weeks, it's actually Kerfoot, not McCann. That would be awesome, but I'm not expecting that.
Don't at me. Edler is going to Calgary to replace Giordano. That's from Brendan in Nanaimo. Interesting wrinkle to it all. Now we're expecting Giordano to maybe get moved at some point, but as far as what happens in Calgary, you know, it's a big blow for them losing their captain. And not that it wasn't expected, but is that something that opens up for Alex Edler? Go back, play with Tanev and Markstrom, a team that, you know, I think a lot of people would look at and say has higher aspirations given some of the talent. They haven't been able to fulfill their talent, their potential the last couple of years. Is that something that's attractive to him now?
Canucks East, yes. You know, Alex would be able to talk to at least a couple guys, see what it was like in Calgary. And I also saw in the Dunbar Lumber text inbox 650, 650, and don't at me earlier, that Giordano gets traded to the Oilers.
That'd be peak chaos. You know. The thing is, they need a right side guy, not a left side D.
I know, but it's fun to think of just that Battle of Alberta and seeing someone go from Calgary to Edmonton, which doesn't happen a lot.
I like this idea. This is unsigned. Don't at me. Jim Benning had orders from above not to get pushed around by Francis in what is the first ever transaction between the two teams. That's funny. Now, I don't give a lot of credence to that, but I like the idea of thinking about it.
The rivalry started already.
Yeah,
the Canucks are trying to win.
The first loss can't be one where we're the first trade can't be one where we are retaining salary. They get the W right away. That's funny. That's really good.
That is very good. And this one from Nathan and Poco. I'll wait a while before assuming Canucks can't get something done on the blue line. Would you really be shocked if we got Fabro for Schmidt or Zadorov for Holtby and signed Hackenpaw and UFA? Fabro seemed to really fall in favor last year. Just example that there's still lots that could happen.
And one more here. Don't at me. This one is Minor Matt. Screw the Crack Shack. With the lack of available star power by the Kraken, Climate Pledge Arena will be known as the Jolly Green Grindhouse. That's from Minor Matt in Abbotsford. Let's take a look at that team. You know, by and large, I would say, again, it all depends on what their goals were coming into this. I know a lot of people wanted Tarasenko, James Van Riemsdyk, and the thing with that is it comes with a certain dollar amount, and if, you know, you start reviewing what Seattle actually did here, it's very obvious that they tried to build a team to give themselves a lot of financial wiggle room, because right now cash is king. This isn't just about, you know, filling a roster that looks the coolest on day one. It's about how can you use this as a platform to build upon for the rest of your tenure here for Ron Francis. If it's 5, 7, 10 years, you know, you can make mistakes even now that harm you down the road. To me, I look at this and I say, they've given themselves a lot of opportunity for what is the NHL's best currency right now is cash. And they've left themselves a lot of runway to try to, you know, open up opportunities elsewhere as well.
Yeah. Well, why wouldn't you though, Bic, in the simple fact that, you don't necessarily have to win out of the gate. I mean, Vegas was a great story. You know, as long as you're competitive, you're going to have the excitement of people just wanting to see hockey, wanting to go to games. It's a market where you don't have NBA basketball there anymore. The Mariners have barely been relevant, although a bit better. And the Seahawks are king. And yes, there's quite a few Sounders fans as well, but they don't have to be this star-studded hockey team out of the gate. The more flexibility they have, the more assets they can accumulate, the more that they can do in that regard, that sets them up quite nicely building and moving forward, because their ownership is all in. They want to spend some money. And you know, Ian Furness reporting that among multiple NHL people I've heard from, the theme is simple. Side deals, a lot of additional compensation coming the Kraken way. That's what they need. They need to build assets. They need to get, you know, more into that organization, and they don't have to come out of the gate, in my opinion, and be the best hockey team in the National Hockey League. There's going to be that love affair, that honeymoon period for a few years at the very least, where people are just going to want to go to games.
That's the benefit of, you know, being the expansion team, right? You can't compare it to Vegas, and nobody's trying to place that label upon them, but the benefit is, you know, you get that grace period, you get that honeymoon period. Entry points matter, and everyone recognizes you're coming in with a clean slate. You've got to rebuild this with half the league's assets already protected away from you. Everyone knows it's going to be a challenge. That's why we marveled at what Vegas did. Nobody expected that. And that's what makes it such a tremendous story to say an expansion team going to the championship game. That is unbelievable. We're never going to see it in our lifetime. I felt compelled to travel down to Vegas just to be there to see, hey, what is this even like? I don't understand. You may never come across something like that ever again in sports. And so for Seattle, they approach this in a way that, hey, how do we open up opportunities for us? And you think about a franchise that's, you know, analytically driven, analytically minded. How do you create institutional edges? Where can you find value? Well, you're going to come up to July 28th, and do you find value in the free agent market that other teams may overlook, and you're willing to pay an extra $100K to say, this is what your real value is, but we think we've got you on a cheap contract, and we can find extra value and win in that way, not just in this free agent class, but even moving forward. You know, next year's free agent class is really the one that you want to save your budget for. And even after a year of full NHL revenue, will that increase spending for teams? Will that change the motivations for ownership across the leagues? And, you know, set yourself up nicely for that summer when, you know, potentially you could see some pretty big names in next year's free agent class.
Yeah, and, you know, don't forget about the draft as well, Bick. Greg Wisniewski, who is a regular on Halford and Brough, based on some of these picks today, assume the Kraken now own about 65% of the first round on Friday. Maybe a little high, but, you know, get some young talent in, draft well, build your team so that in, you know, 4 years from now that they're a superpower. Again, Ron Francis is a very smart hockey guy, and I believe he realized pretty early on that the GMs and the rest of the front offices around the league weren't going to, I'll say, get fooled like they did with Vegas. So he had to come up with a different strategy, a different plan, a different idea. And, you know, time will tell whether this was the right one. But at least right now they have that flexibility or that option or that ability for them to move and shake a little bit down the road. And also, you know, bring in some very good pieces by flipping some stuff here after this expansion draft.
Bick Nizar and Craig McEwen here on Canucks Central. Your thoughts always welcome. 650-650. Elsewhere in the Pacific Division, so Mike Smith signs a multi-year deal in Edmonton, which is really fascinating because they lose one of their defensive D-men. And now we're looking at this goalie who was really sharp last year, which was surprising to many, including myself, and a two-year deal, $2 million per. I just look at Edmonton, I think it feels a bit rudderless now, right? Like, this summer should have been an opportunity to build upon. You get back into the playoffs, things start feel like they're trending a lot better. You lose Adam Larson now, and you're back circling the drain kind of on Mike Smith all over again. It's a bit rough on Mike Smith because he had a good season, but how comfortable are you willing to bet on a guy at that age? And, you know, this is a team. I feel like we've kind of put Vegas number one in the Pacific Division, Edmonton number two just because of McDavid and Draisaitl. And there was a gap between them and the rest of that group of, you know, Seattle, Vancouver, Calgary, L.A., could something happen with them? San Jose, could something big happen with them? But I feel like Edmonton, the gap has closed all because of Edmonton's undoing rather than any of the progress other teams have made.
Yeah, and, you know, you mentioned the age. Listen, Smith had a great regular season. I'm not so sure he was that solid in the playoffs. He had his issues with some rebound controls and some of that, but is that a function or a fact that they know what they have in him and the goalie market, they're not really all that impressed with what might be out there, and there are going to be some bargains to be had? I'm not sure you're right what Edmonton is doing right now. I mean, Kenny Holland has built some really good teams in a non-cap era. I'm not so sure that where they're headed or what they're doing. Hey, you always have, as you said, McDavid and Draisaitl. That's going to be your X factor, and those guys can carry the day. But they certainly don't seem better right now than what they were when they ended the regular season, just with the Larson loss and also bringing Smith back. And now, you know, Keith does come in and gives them some Stanley Cup pedigree or experience, but you're asking a lot of guys who are closer to 40 than they are 30 to, you know, stay healthy, stay competitive, and keep their skills sharp.
Yeah, and the upside of McDavid and Draisaitl always means you're going to have a baseline. It's just, you know, for a team that has superstar potentials and true superstars, you kind of want to see them go on a long run at some point. And I just look at what they're doing and think it seems like they're heightening the hurdle on themselves. And the Larson part of this all, too, is just stunning to say, like, you couldn't match that offer? You couldn't add a little bit more to it and make your own destination a little bit more enticing, but he gets his opportunity to walk on down to Seattle and sign his contract. And
yeah, remember the talk, though, you know, a month ago or a few weeks ago that he was going to re-sign there and everything seemed okay.
Yeah.
I would be curious to hear or find out, and we probably never will, what transpired, what the difference was for him to want to get out of Edmonton. Because you're right, quite honestly, the Oilers would have matched or could have matched or wanted to match, but he obviously wanted to try something different. Could be the tax situation, I'm not sure, but that's a real... Is that telling about the core of your hockey team? Is that telling you something about the city again, that players just don't want to stay there? I don't know. I would be a little worried.
Well, on that, like, that's why that Ryan Nugent-Hopkins deal, like, made sense. Like, yeah, it's 8 years, but you have somebody that wants to stay in your city. Like, you have to approach each 32 franchises as their own independent analysis. Like, what factors come into players' decisions to stay in certain cities and why they would want to play in your city? And Edmonton, like, one of the things they have to deal with is which players actually want to come here. Yeah, there's a huge talent pool of NHL players, but how many of them actually want to play there? And you just saw here, like, Adam Larson decided, you know what? Not for me. And whether it's about the city, whether it's about, hey, Oscar Klefbom's not going to play anymore and they're close and maybe I just need to get out while I still can. If you have players that want to play there, you kind of have to value them to say, okay, we're willing to pay you. Even Duncan Keith, there's a guy who has a certain amount of pedigree and skill set, and you look at that and you say, hey, this is a guy that wants to come to our city. We might have to do this trade because how many guys actually want to play here? Of this talent pool of, you know, thousands players, a little bit more than that, you have to approach it as, hey, which 300 actually want to play here and which of those 300 actually keep us competitive?
You would think, and it isn't the great Alberta ads they do where you come experience Alberta,
yeah.
You know, you would think having McDavid there would be the pull or the plan or the thing that would get players to stay or want to come to Edmonton. But it just doesn't seem that. I mean, I don't have any anecdotal evidence or anything really to support this, but I find less people want to get out of Winnipeg than Edmonton. It just seems to me that for whatever reason, the City of Champions doesn't have the allure it once did. And, you know, you look at some of the ex-Canucks who've gone to Calgary who might suggest, oh, it's a better city than Edmonton. And it's really interesting because, as I said, they do have two of the best scorers in the National Hockey League.
Yeah, this isn't like the James Neal and Milan Lucic offseason where it's like, hey, just come here, we'll set you up, and you're going to play next to Connor McDavid. Well, those opportunities are starting to slide away, and I'm curious how many other guys are willing to look at that and say, oh, I can sidle up next to Connor McDavid and all will be good. And they're playing Draisaitl there a bit. They're playing, Puljujarvi there a little bit. So those opportunities might be drying up. Tyson Barrie took advantage of it, but how many times can you keep doing that?
Yeah, and, you know, if Edmonton is going to, you know, become a better hockey team, they're going to have to, in my opinion, look at splitting those top two guys up and getting some balance. And maybe that's what you look at. If we have one really great line we were shown in the playoffs this year that can get shut down, that we're not as close perhaps as what, you know, they would suggest they are in Edmonton. But it's a really interesting angle for me, you know, why Larson decided he wanted to go elsewhere, because the fit and everything that it appeared at the end of the hockey season and the last few weeks that it was all trending towards him going back there.
If he took a 4x4 and came to Vancouver, you would say, okay, he believes in the vision of the Vancouver Canucks and, you know, Swedish connection, Daniel and Henrik Sedin, all this sort of stuff. You could make that argument. But because it's the expansion team, like, that's what's so fascinating of, like, this is a blank slate. There's no history there. There's no way you can say, like, oh, I grew up watching the Kraken, and, boy, I really always wanted to play. You can't do that. There's none of it there. So
do you think, though, he gets sucked in with, oh, Vegas did it and got, you know, really far really quick?
Come on. What players are doing this? What players are doing that, though?
I'm just throwing, like, it out there.
There's no competitive angle to sell on. There's no historical angle. The offer wasn't so overwhelming where you're sitting there like, oh, you had to accept this offer. Like, we've heard about Landeskog and Seattle's interest there, but it might take $8, $9, $10 million to try to pull it off. This isn't that. This is $16 million.
Yeah, taxes in a beautiful city, though. You know,
it's a pittance, man.
It reminds him of Sweden, perhaps. The water and the Space Needle.
And the sea creatures, I don't know. Maybe that's part of it. We'll get into some more of it. The early impressions of what the Kraken built with Dick Sedorit. We'll talk to him in just a couple of minutes as we continue to rack to the expansion draft. NHL draft coverage on Sportsnet 650 brought to you by Andrew Sherritt Limited, your local family and employee-owned wholesale distributor with locations across Western Canada. Purchase heating, plumbing, and irrigation supplies online at Sherritt.com. Bick Nizar, Craig McEwen, coming back here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.